Alex Newton in the studio now. Hello, good to see you.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Alex is the Beeston chiropractor, and so the spine is your area of expertise, isn't it, as a chiropractor, I think?
That's correct, yes. That's the main area. That's our bread and butter, neck, upper back and lower back. But obviously we have to appreciate the fact that the extremities can have a knock-on effect of that. So everything from right down to your feet, ankles, knees, they can have an impact on the back. And if people are having back pain, it may be that the problem actually starts at their feet and goes upwards rather than actually just a back problem.
Yeah. Now, you see, I have noticed something, and I'll share this with you. And it's to do with walking the dogs in a certain pair of shoes when it's muddy through the winter. So I've got a special pair of shoes that I wear when I walk the dogs. And I also have occasional problems with, is it plantar fasciitis?
Plantar fasciitis.
Plantar fasciitis. Yep. So I have got these special inserts that go into shoes that lift my arches.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed, and I noticed it this year, and then I thought, this happened last year as well. I start to get achy knees. Now, I have these inserts in other shoes as well, and I don't get achy knees. And, you know, it was only this week I suddenly thought, it's a boot that I'm wearing when I walk the dogs. Could it be that the thing that's lifting my arch, i.e. pushing my feet slightly outwards, in a pair of shoes, the ankle adjusts for that, so that by the time the force has got to the knee, it's normal. But in a pair of boots, the ankle can't really react because it's got the boot wrapped around it. So it's the knee that is taking the slight shift in... Could that be why my knees go a bit funny?
It sounds like you may have hit the nail on the head. My first question would be to you, are they Wellington boots?
No, no.
Or are they like walking
boots
that are
a
lace-up? So they would be much more supportive. And as you say, they're going to immobilise the ankle.
They, in fact, Velcro. Then, they've got big Velcro straps.
Oh,
I love a bit of Velcro,
No laces there, then?
No.
No laces at all?
No.
OK, right. So that, again, would change the dynamics slightly, because being laced up, though, you would probably lace them up a little bit tighter than you probably would the Velcro. Depends how old the boots are and whether the Velcro is giving way a little bit.
No, it's hanging on in there. And
But yes, you're probably absolutely right that the ankle's much more immobilised and changes the dynamics, more strain through the knees and obviously potentially the hips and the lower back there.
Because didn't I say something to you about my knee last time you were here?
Telling me about your knee, yes. I keep telling you to try and get it treated and adjusted and make it right.
Yeah. Well, one day. But then, you see, I was thinking it can't be the insert in my shoe, because I have these inserts in other shoes and they don't cause a problem. And then it was literally this week I thought, hang on, they're tight around the ankle. That's why it's moving into the knee.
Moving differently.
And it just bears out what you say. Because it hurts in one part of the body, it could be actually the other end of the body that's the seat of the problem, is it?
But sometimes we also see the other extreme of the problem, in that people have got foot and ankle problems and they have some wonderful orthotics made by the NHS or privately. And I ask them how they're getting on. And after sort of 6 months to a year, well, they're really not making any difference. And you sort of think, well, hold on a minute. You're retired. You go shopping once a week. You put your outdoor shoes on once a week. And that's when you wear your orthotics. And then we realise that actually most of the time you're walking around the house, either barefoot in slippers, you're not getting that support. So really, you need to be wearing orthotics or insoles all the time that you're upright and weight-bearing. Obviously, that becomes quite difficult in the summer when you're wearing sandals and flip-flops and things like that. So if you have got a problem, and we know, as we've spoken before, that they can actually cause all these plantar fasciitis and foot problems that we see. In the summer months, when you want to change your footwear to lighter footwear, you really need to choose something that you are more able to wear a supportive sole or insole in there.
A standard flip-flop is kind of the worst, I would have thought, if you've got that sort of issue.
That's right, because the main thing about things like flip-flops and pumps and shoes that don't have a fastening over them, you're actually using the intrinsic muscles, the little tiny muscles inside the foot, to actually make the shoe stay on. So this is why sometimes when you're walking along, all of a sudden you can lose that flip-flop or that shoe, and that's because your body stopped thinking about holding on to the shoe. And it's that holding the shoe in place with your, or the flip-flop in place with your, the muscles in your foot, that actually lead to the onset of things like plantar fasciitis and foot problems.
We're going to talk in a minute more about back issues and some figures that have been research showing that maybe in this part of the world we're taking least care of our backs, and that's leading to some real problems. Alex has been looking into this research. She'll share more with you after. I bet you wished you could have heard the conversation between me and Alex while that was going on, because it was all about Velcro. We'll have to do a Velcro phone-in one day. Do you have any Velcro in your life? I know it's a trade name, but I don't think there's any other...
On the patient's gowns at the back,
is that
they
it?
Have Velcro, and they're always complaining that they're not sticking enough, so we have to have it replaced regularly. But that's the only time I come across Velcro, I think.
I just find it's a wonder fabric, as you push it together and it holds.
But it attracts the fluff, that's
there is a bit of that going on, and it does make a strange sort of ripping sound when you part it. Now, let's move on to the problems that people have in their backs, and there is nothing more debilitating, really, than a bad back. And I think there's also always a feeling of guilt when somebody's got a bad back, because we kind of know that it's probably our fault that we've got a bad back. We've done something wrong. It doesn't always immediately happen, does it? You can lift something and think, oh, that's fine, I lifted that bag of compost. And then it's the next day when suddenly it's like, oh, what's happened there? Is
it? But just the next day, it can be up to a couple of weeks?
Hence,
before you can actually start. When we consult with patients and we try and find the cause of their problem, sometimes we have to go back more than just a couple of days, because the body's got a degree of tolerance, and depending on how strong your core is and how fit you are, and your sort of type of lifestyle of how active you are on a day-to-day basis, or you have a sedentary job, you tolerate a degree of what you've upset during that particular activity. But if things have actually been distorted after a period of time, you start to slip out of line, and then you'll start to become symptomatic, and that's when obviously people start to think about seeking some help when things are.
And it's fair to say, if you go to a GP, the likelihood is they may prescribe painkillers and probably say leave it for a bit and see if it goes away.
Yes. The problem is you have to sort of realise that by the time you go to the GP, you've probably had it a week or two, maybe. Mm. And then they sort of say, well, leave it a month or so. So now we're talking about 8 weeks. So you're having substantial changes and compensation going on within the body. Then you start getting another area that starts to, because it's been compensating, other areas that are starting to manifest themselves. And then when they present eventually, because sometimes they go and have maybe a course of other type of physical therapy, which usually involves perhaps a course of exercises. They find that those exercises aren't giving any long-term relief, because the problem, as soon as they stop doing the exercises, it all starts coming back. Then often we find them on our doorstep, having gone through the ritual of the GP, the physiotherapist, the exercises, the anti-inflammatories, the painkillers, etc., really quite fed up with it. It can be months before we see them. And then at that point, we sort of have to sort of undo them, if you like, and get them back to how they're supposed to be by sort of peeling away the layers of compensation that's gone on over a number of weeks.
So what would you do as a chiropractor, that is different to what a physiotherapist would do? Or is it the fact that you would come into the picture earlier normally if somebody is self-referring to you?
What we have to remember is there's a little bit of a grey area. We've got a bit of a Venn diagram, so they're not talking exclusively about certain physios will do it certain ways, and they will incorporate a type of chiropractic response of looking at the holistic approach. But the majority of physios will focus on the area of symptom and give exercises as a result of that. They are therapists who work having had someone else having more than likely diagnosed the problem. So they've come in because the person's got sciatica or lumbago or arthritic neck or something like that. So they'll do some examination, but then they will tend to work on what they've been instructed to work on. From a chiropractic perspective, most chiropractors will look at the whole body, the holistic approach. So we're looking at them usually undressed in a gown, and we look at their posture, we look at how their feet interact with their knees interact with their hips interact with their pelvis, and then how that affects the posture and even right up into the shoulders. So we would often see someone who's perhaps had a shoulder problem over a number of years, had a course of physiotherapy, given some great exercises that should have helped relieve that problem. They come to us with perhaps a low back problem, but then they just mention in passing that they've also got a shoulder problem. And you realise that even all those exercises they've done to help the shoulder's never got better. But you start adjusting and realigning the bottom of the spine and the pelvis, maybe the knees and the feet and the hips as well, the shoulder problem starts to settle down, because the imbalance between the pelvis and the shoulder girdle, they have to balance, is constantly aggravating that ongoing shoulder problem, so that it'll never get better until you source the root cause of the problem.
The research I mentioned is tied in with Chiropractic Awareness Week, which is coming up in April, so there may well be more talk about all of this, but they've looked into why people do suffer from spinal problems, bad backs, and the main reasons, I suppose, are, in a sense, obvious. Do you want to run through the top three?
So lifting and carrying heavy objects, prolonged sitting, and poor posture.
Mm. Well, lifting or carrying heavy objects is self-explanatory in a way, and we should all learn how to lift things, and indeed learn how to say, no, I'm not going to lift that, go and get some help. But sitting for a long period of time, a lot of people have jobs where that is the nature of the beast.
And that's what we have to be more mindful of. So we really need to make sure that, you know, we've all got mobile phones, and that's probably part of the problem these days, is that we're spending too long on the mobile phones, on the computers. But if you set your phone, set timers on your phone while you're at work, and every 30 to 40 minutes, you don't have to go anywhere, just stand up and sit down again. It resets the sitting posture.
Ah.
Making sure your posture when you are sitting is correct. There are various videos out there. We've got some on our website. The British Chiropractic Association have got lots of videos there. They show you how to set up your desk, your posture at work, to make sure your screen's the right height, the chair's the right height. So when you do sit back down again, you're going back into that natural, neutral position. So you're not overstretching, overslouching when you're sitting. But just by standing up and sitting down again, that will reset the posture. And if you do that every 30 to 40 minutes throughout the day, every couple of hours, ideally, yes, go and walk to the coffee machine or the photocopier, or, you know, go up to it for a comfort break, but maybe go to the facilities on the next floor rather than just walking down the corridor. It's all about these maximising your ability to move. We are designed to move. We are motile creatures, and sitting for 8 hours at a and it can be done, because we're so absorbed in the computers these days. You sit there and you realize that actually 2, 3, maybe 4 hours have passed and you've never actually moved, and by that time your posture is so poor and your muscles are so tired and so switched off, you're actually not even feeling, everything is all numb, you're not feeling what's actually going on there. So these statistics that are starting to come out, it's a relatively small study, but done over a very short period of time. It was worrying to see that in the East Midlands, or in the Midlands itself, we seem to have the worst problems with back pain, and even more of concern is that we've got the highest percentage of people under 20 that are reporting that they've had back and neck pain than anybody else in the region where this study was taken.
About 1 in 3 young people under 20. Is that down to computers and iPads and tablets?
I think so, yes. I think we've got to be very mindful. We've got to be very strict with our young people and make sure that we do limit the periods of time that they're sat at their computers, they're sitting on their phones, and they're sitting at these gaming facilities that we buy them for them.
Mm.
I mean, it's our fault, isn't
it? Keep them
quiet. So, but we need to make sure that we balance that and become more mindful, and make sure that they are more mindful of it. So, you know, it's not just their responsibility to be mindful of it, but our responsibility to reinforce that and make people aware of the problems that they are potentially causing themselves in the future.
Alex Newton, the Beeston chiropractor, has been talking about keeping joints supple and pain away, and it's prompted Brian and Gedling to get in touch to say, do you know if there's a connection between cervical spondylosis and headaches? I'm not sure if you need to explain what cervical spondylosis is. You do for me. I don't know what it means.
Yes. Cervical spondylosis is the general wear and tear of the joints. Well, you can have it in any part of the spine, really, but Brian is experiencing it in the neck region, and this is where the mechanics of the joints in the neck have changed over a number of years. That's probably, we're probably talking 20 plus years for him to have been diagnosed with that he's had problems quite a long time. And what happens is, if the bones and the joints are in the wrong position or working incorrectly over that period of time, they start to change shape, and these can start to produce little spurs and little outgrowths of bone away from the spine, and these can cause irritation of nerves. So people can often get arm pain, pins and needles, numbness into the arms, but also it changes the shape of the neck by way of creating some tension and changes in the muscles. These muscles go right up to the back of the neck and insert onto the back of the head, and you can perceive these changes possibly as headaches. However, we must remember that headaches are caused by a lot of things. There is a large percentage in our profession that are caused by neck problems, but we need to rule out to make sure that it's not a blood pressure problem or a food allergy or maybe even a dental problem that's actually, or a jaw problem that could be causing headaches. So best thing to do is find out that there's nothing else there, and it is the primary cause is the neck, the cervical spondylosis, and chiropractic is something that could be useful for Brian.
Well, I hope that's useful, Brian and Gedling. Thanks for getting in touch and putting that question. Alex will save further talk for the next time you're here, which won't be too far away, I know. But for now, thank you very much indeed for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Beeston chiropractor Alex Newton there on BBC Radio Nottingham.